Accession number 29958, reel number 8.
Well, here we have a crew working together, as we've mentioned earlier, relying on one another to do the job properly. My impression too is that once you're doing a job, you haven't really got much time to think about anything else other than doing the job.
That's quite right. That's it. You're keyed up. You're obviously, the adrenaline's flowing, and your crew are all alert and searching the sky for enemy aircraft. And they're also concentrating on their jobs. The navigator, of course, this raid that we did on Hamburg on the U-boat pens was one of the hairiest ones we experienced, because the apart from the flak being particularly heavy and the searchlights intense, when we had dropped our bombs on the target. The navigator gave us an incorrect course, and we found ourselves flying back towards the stream of aircraft that were coming in to bomb, and that was very hair-raising, because I queried it straight away, because I could see that there were going to be big problems, because I'd seen many, many collisions, especially at night time. You see a collision of aircraft, and you can see a number of aircraft shot down by enemy fire, and or whether it be flak or fighter aircraft, and it's not a very pretty sight to see an aircraft spiralling down towards the earth, and so therefore he smartly gave us a revised course. In other words, we were flying. We were flying sort of east instead of west, or we were flying not east. I should have said we were flying south east instead of directly northeast, away from the target. I could see that on my map of the track, but obviously it'd given us the wrong heading, Fortunately, we weren't affected in any way. We weren't damaged by flak. We weren't damaged by collision, because a collision, that's curtains for you.
Obviously, you mentioned this sort of situation of human error, and often you're mentioning these collisions that might happen. Mm. I mean, we are all human after all, and particularly given this high-stress situation at night time.
Yes.
These things are more likely to happen, yes. I would have thought. What was it like to see something like a collision take place? What was it like to see a plane going down?
It was very, very, very disturbing, because you didn't know whether you couldn't see whether the crew got out, or whether you'd see the end results the problem is you'd usually flown over the area by the time the aircraft had crash-landed or crashed, so that you didn't really know the outcome. So you don't know. You wondered whether it was one of your squadron, and when you got back to base, of course, and had your meal of steak and eggs, which was only given to air crew, then you'd go and have a look at the aircraft, that details on the board of the aircraft that returned or still hadn't returned from base, and you'd know eventually the number of casualties. And usually at the time, I think because it was the time towards the end of the war, there weren't that many aircraft lost, but usually on a raid where we'd send out say 20 or 30 aircraft from the squadron, you'd often have three or four or half a dozen aircraft that didn't return. Now, some of them may have landed at emergency runway on the east coast, or some may have crash landed in enemy territory and been taken prisoner. Who knows? But and you'd never find that out until after the war. But the other thing about it was that you didn't, having been on the squadron for such a limited period of time, from March virtually to May, you didn't get to know personally, apart from your crew, you didn't get to know too many of the other pilots. I was in my room at the officer's mess. I had a fellow called Jeff Blackwell, who was the navigator in another pilot's crew, Colin Gilbert, his crew. Now, you knew a few of the other members' crews and a few other pilots, but you didn't get to know them, which was in one way good in one respect, in that it would have affected you far more greatly if you'd got to know these fellows, and then they were lost in a raid. And so
my impression is too that you sort of had this fatalistic opinion about the whole situation. Oh, well, poor bastard. Let's have a beer.
Yes.
How did that help you to sort of continue on with the job that was at hand for you?
Well, you knew that you just had to wait it out and find out, because these operations, there were a lot of operations cancelled. We had a number of briefings for operations that never actually took place because of conditions in the target area, or conditions, weather conditions on the track, or for some other peculiar reason. But we were often, when we had a raid cancelled, we would then be sent on leave for about 3 or 4 days, and then come back. And so, of course, sometimes when you after having this this hairy raid on Hamburg that we experienced, when we went on leave after that, you weren't too eager to get back too soon, because you realised that that you weren't immortal. That there was a certain mortality about it, and the longer you could stay on leave would be the better. But when you got back again, of course, you were keyed up and conscientious and waiting for the next operation to take place.
In relation to this human error, people also talk of the gremlins, things that cause things to go wrong.
Oh yes, yes.
And that might not want to be explained, or might.
Yes.
Be explained away by some other thing. Mm-hmm. What experiences of the gremlins did you
have? Well, I must confess that we had very few, because it must have been the ground staff of our the maintenance crews on the ground staff must have been very, very good people, because the aircraft were serviced so well that we never really had any apart from that hydraulic failure in our first operation, we never experienced any other adverse effect. And of course, so therefore, you know, you can't blame the gremlins or anyone who didn't bring their rabbit's foot, or who were superstitious. Superstition really should never play a part in war, because once that happens and you rely on a rabbit's foot to keep you alive, then you know, it's not a very good you don't have a great future, I wouldn't think.
Your mind isn't on the job if you've got your mind on the girlfriend's silk stocking around your neck.
That's quite right.
In relation to human error, in relation to things like gremlins, was there anything that it happened in the air or preparing to be in the air that you couldn't explain, that you saw or heard or experienced?
No, I unfortunately haven't got any experiences in that area, because I think that the only trouble, see, an aircraft, they wouldn't allow an aircraft to fly on our squadron unless it was completely serviceable. And I know there's, you know, things can go wrong, as in the in the hydraulic failure in the early in the first raid, but that wasn't a bad problem, because when you go to an emergency runway, they're so long, they're a mile or two long, and so you don't need brakes. You need them, you know, you need them to land, or if you, when you're taking off in a full bomb load and there's something goes wrong, then you need very good brakes then. But normally they wouldn't fly aircraft unless they were completely serviceable and passed the test. And so therefore I unfortunately haven't got any experiences that I can relate in that area.
Okay, well, let's talk. Continue on with your experience in relation to operations. Yeah. And
well, the following raid, as I mentioned before, was the Wangerooge Island in Holland, which was where they had gun installations and a rocket site, and that was the reason that that I was keen to bring that in earlier in the conversation, because the V2 rockets. Were believed to have been operated from Wangerooge Island, and so it was necessary to demolish the site to eliminate the terrible scourge of being bombed by the V2 rocket. But the following raid was.
Could you describe that raid to us? Were there any?
Wangerooge being not that far away from base, it was only about a 3 or 4 hour return journey, so even though they didn't take you directly to the target, you always go in a way that tries to disguise where you were eventually going to bomb, and so you don't travel direct to the target, but being right close to the in Holland to Great Britain, it wasn't a very difficult. So we only had flak or anti-aircraft fire, and no, as I said before, no fighters interrupted us. But being a daylight raid, we had no problems with fighters, which obviously our own fighters would have been escorting us during the daytime. And that's, by the way, that's one thing I wanted to mention. In daylight raids, the Flying Fortress, the American Flying Fortress, they would only carry out, well, to my knowledge, would only carry out daylight raids. And we were often, in our daylight raids, we would be flying with Flying Fortresses. They only had one navigator. He led the way, and the rest flew in formation to the target, and they bombed the target. But I must confess that I saw more aircraft go down in daylight than I saw go down in night raids, because you wouldn't believe that, you'd think the reverse would be so, that you'd be able to see aircraft. But I saw several times Flying Fortresses colliding in the air. Now, how that would happen just doesn't seem possible to me, but it happened, and it was tragic to see it happen. But when you think about the night raids, no doubt they lost a lot more aircraft at night, but there weren't as many collisions at night, because when you flew in at a certain height with aircraft in front of you, you had that juddering feeling every now and again of the slipstream of aircraft in front of you, and you're on the right course to the target. So, and it gave you some feeling of safety, being in a stream, especially if you're in a 1,000 bomber raid, and you had aircraft flying in front of you, and you could feel the slipstreams at regular intervals. You knew you were on target.
You were mentioning these mid-air collision. Presumably you could see it about to happen.
Yes.
What was one able to do in that situation? Could you signal? Could you?
No, there's nothing you could do whatsoever. I think a lot of it happened maybe when aircraft that were flying in formation maybe rose and maybe collided, hitting the aircraft above them. And that's the only thing that I can think of, but there's no way. You see, you had to maintain complete silence on all raids. You could communicate. Your wireless operator enabled you to communicate with or listen to the master bomber over the target, and for directions. And mainly, you had a master bomber at night time, not in the daytime. And so,
That's right. You're mentioning these mid-air collisions that you weren't able to talk to one another. Must have been an extremely...
Oh yeah, because of silence. You had to observe strict wireless silence, other than in an emergency. But then the wireless operator had special codes that, and we had to turn on. By the way, when you came back to England, you had to turn on your IFF identification of friend or foe, flip a switch, because if you didn't do that, you could have been attacked by your own fighters returning to your own base. And that has happened. That happened during the war. I didn't see it happen, but I've been told that quite a number of aircraft were shot down by our own aircraft because they didn't switch on the IFF. Or, unfortunately for them, possibly, the equipment may have been destroyed with aircraft gun fire and or fighter aircraft fire. So that's the tragedy of it all.
In relation to the Americans, how are they seen by the average Australian, the average English pilot?
I think that possibly they were quite well regarded, but of course I think most Australians were a bit jealous of the fact that the Americans had so many dollars. And they came across with so many pairs of silk stockings and so many boxes of chocolates and so many cartons of cigarettes that they had an unfair advantage over the members of the empire troops and airmen and sailors, because they were so well heeled and well equipped to make dates with any female that looked like being a target to them. But generally speaking, they were very pleasant fellows to meet. And I've got a story to tell you after the war later on, where I met one of them. But I'll save that for later on.
Okay.
And I better tell you
but
about...
How are they seen as pilots? I mean, obviously we hear the stories of oversexed, overpaid, and
over
the, and all that.
That's right,
stuff.
Yes.
But how are they seen as flyers? You mentioned these
daylight
flyers in the air. I mean,
yes, well...
Not too confident for me.
No. Well, the thing about it is, I think the navigators that were trained under the air training, the Empire Air Training Scheme... Our Australian and Canadian and English navigators were far superior to the Americans. They obviously didn't trust them, because they had a master navigator, and he was the only one in the flight that navigated. And so if he got shot down, I don't know what would happen. There must have been a backup. But so I think the quality of the crew, you couldn't make comparisons apart from maybe the navigators, because I think they had as much training and as much skill, all other members of the crew, as the average air train scheme pilot, navigator, wireless operator, etc., gunners had. So
you're going to continue with...
Yes, well, my second last raid during the war was to the industrial and a commercial target at Munster in Germany. Now, this target was supposed to have very heavy flak. We were informed there'd be very heavy flak. We bombed with high explosive bombs and incendiaries. I would say that we would have taken about 10,000 pounds of bombs on that particular flight, it would have been a raid that took a return trip of about eight hours, and I can assure you that the flak was particularly heavy at this target, from my memory, our aiming point was pretty close to being accurate, and the raid was a success. I think most of the last raids on Germany, you must say, were successful. I don't think there were too many that were not successful, but this raid was particularly heavy in the way of flak. We had no a bit of slight damage to the exterior of the aircraft, but no important damage to the aircraft, and we returned to base safely.
You talk of these experiences, obviously, and you talk of witnessing other planes going down, and it would sound to me, you may disagree, that you had a pretty lucky run, and that luck actually has more to do with whether you're going to get home or not than anything else.
I'm sure, yes. Apart from dedication, every member of the crew being totally dedicated to the job, I think that luck plays a very big part. It's like it's like gambling. If you're unlucky, you shouldn't gamble. But you never can tell when you're flying whether you're going to be lucky or not. But there is a lot of luck, because you only had to be hit by have a direct hit from to your wings where your fuel is carried, and the aircraft would explode. And I've seen a number of explosions at night of aircraft that were hit with flak, obviously on the wings, where the fuel is stored, and so there was quite an element of luck. I agree with that statement, and of course, if you got any religion in you too, you like to think that the fellow up top was looking after you as well.
Well, I was going to ask you about that too.
Yes.
We talked about risks. We talked about luck. We've talked about superstition. Did religion play a part in your experience?
I have a feeling that it played some part, because for one thing, we had church parades regularly, which were normally compulsory, and I think that those people who were maybe religious before they joined would attend. Catholics, of course, all Catholics attended their service. They had a separate service to the Anglicans and the other religions. But I do feel that if you've got a positive feeling towards the supreme being who might look after, take care of you, then maybe that's going to help you, and maybe it's not going to help you, because I'm sure there are a lot of religious men who were shot down and or killed in wartime. So really, it was only a small part of it.
Some people mention that their faith was strengthened by their experience. Other people say that the faith they once had didn't exist because of the things that they'd seen with their experience. Seeing planes going down, seeing these mistakes happening, seeing the sort of futility of that situation around you, how did that affect your confidence in this supreme being?
Well,
why was he letting all this stuff go on?
Yes, well, because I believe that the reason people were shot down and killed was because of man-made things, not anything to do with God, because I mean, people obviously like to blame God for what happens, but he's got no control over human beings, actions of human beings, and I don't agree. I agree that it's possible that if you've got enough faith, that is going to help you. It may not save your life, but it's going to help you in the way you live your life. So
people also talk of seeing sort of God in action, you know, on particular occasions, whether it might be in the heat of the Burma Railway or you know,
some battle,
Dunkirk, the Channel Mill Pond on that particular day.
That's
all
right.
Those sorts of things.
Yes.
Did you ever experience anything like that?
No, I did not, but I still think that's quite feasible and possible that it has influenced. Maybe it gets back to the element of luck as well as faith that may help you stay alive and help you in. Eventually, your destiny to return home from the war, but the last raid that we had was a daytime raid on an army, and it was an army support operation at Mönchengladbach in the Ruhr of Germany. Obviously, this was when the war was getting towards the very end, and they were getting close to Berlin, the Russians on one side and the Americans and the Empire troops on the other side.
Were you hearing what was going on?
Oh yes, yes.
What were you gleaning from the?
That's what gave you a lot of confidence, I'm sure, in the positive, the fact that the war was appeared to be drawing to a close, and. And I'm sure that had a great deal to do with your positive attitude towards your operation. But this particular operation was what did we do? Oh yes, we had some flak. It wasn't substantial in this operation. I made a note about that, and it wasn't a very difficult operation. This was another operation that we had in conjunction with the US Air Force, Flying Fortresses took part in this operation as well, because they were also supporting their troops in that particular area at Mönchengladbach. So really, that was the end of getting towards May, when the war suddenly ceased. Hitler was had killed himself in his bunker, and the Russians had invaded Berlin, and lots of Nazis were going on there, I imagine, and so the war was over. And we, of course, celebrated in the appropriate fashion on the squadron with copious quantities of ale for those that imbibed and celebrations. Our wing commander, Holdsworth, broke the news to us, and he joined us in the celebrations in the officers' mess. And it was a great party with a few hangovers the following day.